If I'd known the convention about question marks in titles before this, I would have put a question. I would have made my title a question. Do effective field theories describe emergent phenomena in gravitational physics? So now I'll do that for next time. I've been thinking about emergence for quite a while. I've been thinking about effective field theories in gravitational physics for actually a very short time, but the case is interesting to me because I think it's a case, I'll try to convince you that it's a case, in which effective field theories are used, but it doesn't make any sense to describe them, these phenomena, as emergent. And thinking about that, I actually added a couple of slides last night to talk about emergence, which has totally messed up my timing, but I think it's going to be worthwhile. But first of all, I want to acknowledge the help of Peter Zimmerman from the Department of Physics at the University of Guelph with the preparation of this talk. So I think actually physicists and philosophers have been talking in this conference a little bit across purposes. I think there's actually two very different uses of the term emergence here. What's common to them is that there are two levels or scales, generically a base and an upper. Emergent phenomena or properties at the upper level contrast with merely resultant ones. So we're all on the same page about that, resultant or aggregate. I think what the physicists have meant when they have spoken about emergence is very roughly that emergent phenomena or properties figure in upper-level models but not the base-level models. That's just about as rough as you can put it. Robert Wald said yesterday, everything is emergent from a more base theory. I think that might capture what many physicists think about when they think about emergence. There's nothing really terribly surprising about this. Maybe all models describe emergent phenomena. Maybe there are a few isolated exceptions. So that's one meaning of the term emergence. I think what philosophers have been traditionally talking about, and also some of the philosophers at this conference, is something a little bit different. And Margie Morrison covered this well, I think, although I'm going to arrive at a conclusion that's a bit different than hers. So very roughly speaking, emergent phenomena properties can't be explained by, predicted from, and or reduced to the base level, depending on which philosopher you're talking to. Those might be important. Margie had some account of ontological independence, and I'll get to that. It's a slightly different issue a bit later. I mean, there may be a failure of prediction, reducibility, or explanation because of ontological independence. That's one way to think about it. So most philosophers at least used to think that there are no emergent phenomena in physics. Emergence is something that happens in biology or elsewhere. I think one thing we've learned from Bob's work is that the question of whether a phenomenon is emergent is actually non-trivial and interesting. There are interesting phenomena that can't be reduced to or explained in terms of a base level model. Okay, the approach I'm going to take here, the stipulation I'm going to make about emergence, is that emergence is explanatory failure. So it's an epistemic concept in the way that Margie Morrison was describing. So from here on in, when I say emergence, I mean emergence in the philosophical sense. So both emergent and resultant phenomena are determined by base-level physics. So you wanted some philosophical disagreement, and here we have our first point of philosophical disagreement. So my claim is that in all these cases, there's a determination from the micro or base scale to the macro or upper-level scale. You're not going to have any differences at the macro level without some sort of difference at the micro level. It's another way to think about this. You might have, and you do typically have, what philosophers call multiple realizabilities. So there might be lots of different macro states that give you lots of different micro states that yield the same macro state. That's fine. That doesn't undermine this determination claim. So that's the basis. So there is determination, but nonetheless, in some cases, there is the macro properties or phenomena can't be explained. It's not just that we haven't got the explanation yet, but they can't be explained purely in micro terms.
Can you give an example?
I think Batterman has given us a number of examples of that sort, where you have to take into account larger scale. Well, the example that Marga gave are also examples of that sort. So based purely on the micro laws and the micro states, you can't explain the macro phenomena. Maybe a simpler example that Nigel gave was magnetization. So these are macro properties that aren't completely explainable in the micro system.
So you agree emergence is there, in the sense it's very difficult to explain, like the iron girder example.
Right. Yeah. It's, in fact, impossible to explain in purely in micro terms, exclusively in micro terms.
Impossible in practical sense.
Impossible in the practical sense. Perfect. Okay. Yes, exactly. I could say more about that, but let's move on. So the following, these are not independent criteria for emergence, novelty or ontological independence, the presence of singular limits, irreducibility or a failure of prediction. Those aren't independent criteria for emergence on this approach. Okay, we could talk more about emergence. I'm happy to have questions about that, but I want to move on to my case. So effective field theories have been used successfully in some areas of gravitational physics recently, but in a way that's very different from the way EFTs are used in statistical mechanics and quantum field theory, at least different in some of these philosophical consequences. So I'm going to look at an in-spiral system consisting of two compact bodies spiraling inward and emitting gravitational radiation. Post-Newtonian methods work very well to model these systems. You can predict, and recently EFT models have been developed for these systems as well. Okay, and here's the argument I'm going to make. So I'm going to argue that EFT models in gravitational physics underwrite base level explanations. There's nothing that fails to be explained at the base level. And here the base level refers to general theory of relativity, which is itself viewed as an effective theory. That's another question. So, and the argument essentially says, look, the post-Newtonian models give you pretty good explanations in as approximations of Einstein field equations, and the EFTs provide explanations that are at least as good as those and independent of them. So the EFTs in this case don't predict or describe any emergent phenomena. I think that conclusion generalizes a bit. I think they don't predict or describe emergent phenomena in other kinds of systems modeled by gravitational physics. I think they don't describe emergent phenomena under other views of emergence, not the one I've taken as explanatory failure, other philosophical views. But those are generalizations that I'm not going to argue for today. Those are suggestions. So the game plan is to look at...
A question about that. Sorry. So I don't know if you're going to include this, but John Levin and others have pointed out that with some parameters, in spiraling systems show chaotic behavior. And I think that when there is a transition to chaotic behavior, that might be called emergent phenomenon.
Yes. Okay, I'm looking at systems that don't have chaotic behavior. Right. So the generalization to other kinds of systems treated by gravitational physics.
But these are the same systems. It's just a regime of these in-spiraling systems that you want to discuss are argued to have chaotic, from spin-spin interactions, chaotic behavior that that might be called emergent behavior because it satisfies the kind of statistics of chaotic behavior.
These are the same weak field, slow velocity in spiral systems.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to look at these post-Newtonian models without taking into account spin-spin behavior. The EFT models try to make a claim about EFTs and explanation and conclude. I'm going to have to skip a few slides because we had a little digression on emergence. Okay, so this is what the system looks like. You've got, just to get it concrete, typical length scales of the compact body, the near zone, the orbital radius, and the wavelength of the gravitational radiation, and the far zone where our detectors are located, such as LIGO. And so we're supposed to be able to, within a few years, detect these time-dependent phase of these gravitational waves. So the standard approach uses post-Newtonian approximation methods, and these are applications of singular perturbation theory to the Einstein-Fields equations. These methods work when there are low velocities and the gravitational field is weak, about equal masses. Perturbation is an order of the velocity of the masses, and I had to put this in because I don't fully understand why the post-Newtonian methods are effective in this regime, because you would think that, in fact, the metric in the near zone is far from Newtonian. But it's not just me, although I'd be happy for some advice about this. In-spiral systems are possibly the most remarkable example of the unreasonable effectiveness of post-Newtonian theory, said Clifford Will. Okay, so the way this works is that you write the metric in a weak field form as a Minkowski metric plus some order of perturbation. So you've got these H components, which are order n of the metric. Use the relaxed Einstein field equations, write it down as a wave equation with a source term that depends on the matter stress energy and also depends on the perturbation metric. Expand in orders of velocity and solve. I'll talk a bit more about this, but I just wanted to note at this point that above 3 pn, the finite size effects of the body become relevant, such as the internal structure and tidal effects for black holes, and that the pn approximation treats finite size effects as point particle with higher order multiple terms. And I put that in because the EFT is really going to parallel the pn approach in so many ways, and that point particle approximation is one of them. So in the near zone, you can ignore these retardation effects. You can have a solution that's first order in the metric, I guess zeroth order in the velocity. You have a second order solution where the Laplacian depends on matter sources plus the terms. You get equations for metric in the near zone. However, the expansion diverges at second higher orders, at least outside of the near zone. In the far zone, again, you write the metric in the weak field form. You get a more general post-Minkowski expansion. So lambda there is the full, takes into account all the far zone components. And in this very extremely crude overview, you can use match asymptotic expansion. Take the PN expansion valid for the near zone, the results valid from the far zone, match in the overlap region, which is the orbital scale. And it provides a consistent way to obtain a uniformly valid approximation of the metric for a given order in V, assuming V is the order of V is not that high. Okay, I want to make two comments about the explanations that PN methods offer. Essentially to say that these models underwrite explanations of observable phenomena based on facts about the system, some assumptions from general relativity, and some tried and true approximation techniques. I don't have a whole theory about what counts as an explanation in physics to underwrite this. I hope to get your intuitions on this matter by saying, look, they're grounded in general theory of relativity. They're quite accurate. The predictions are quite accurate. There's not a lot of free parameters, and they have, this is something that philosophers tend to note about explanations, robust support for answering what if things have been different questions. So if your derivation can only treat that one particular value of the parameters, sure, you may have a prediction, but what explanations do something more, and that's they tell you what would have happened if the system had been slightly different, or what would happen in slightly different systems. So explanations give you that extra kind of knowledge, so to speak. Okay, and I want to point out two corollaries of certainly a philosophical interest. The methods involve singular limits. The Einstein field equations are nonlinear, and so are the approximations. So these explanations provide another counterexample to the claim that the presence of a singular limit implies explanatory failure and emergence. As some philosophers have claimed, look, any time regular approximation techniques break down, you have a failure of explanation that has been claimed. I think this is a counterexample to that. The other point that's already been mentioned several times in this conference is that GTR is an effective theory. So the explanations also provide a clear counterexample to the claim that effective theories, merely effective models, cannot be explanatory. Another thing that 90% of philosophers believe, explanations can only be in terms of the fundamental theory, not something shared by physicists. Okay. How am I doing? Okay. So on the EFT approach to in-spiral systems, you're using techniques and knowledge and intuitions brought over from, particularly from quantum field theory, but also statistical mechanics. It also seems to be unreasonably effective. And the approach here is to construct an effective action for an effective field at each scale, match the coefficients of the boundaries to integrate out the shorter range physics. So you start by constructing the most general effective action consistent with the relevant degrees of freedom and symmetries of the system, which looks something like this. You've got the Einstein-Hilbert action, from which you can derive the Einstein field equations in the right gauge. And you've got a point particle action. Now this gets back to Lee's question. I'm assuming that the relevant degrees of freedom do not include spin. If they do include spin, it's, as you point out, although I hadn't realized it before, an entirely different question. So the relevant degrees of freedom are the metric and the world lines of the particles. I think that's about it. Okay. Just to remind you, there's a clear separation of scales, which is one reason why the EFT approach works so well. And in the near zone, the what's nice about this, if I understand it correctly, is that you have the equivalent of the UV cutoff in information about the internal structure. So the point particle action is going to be a sum of terms. So the first term yields the geodesic motion, the EMB tensors, and then there's lots of higher order terms are constructed from the Riemann tensor, induce non-geodesic motion. So just like the PN approach, SPP models finite size effects of what is actually an extended body following a geodesic as a point particle undergoing non-geodesic motion. It's the same idea. Okay, at the orbital scale, you again assume you've got Minkowski plus, in this case, a perturbation. You split the perturbation into short wavelength potential modes, where the first order there is going to be Newtonian, and the long wavelength radiation modes, which you're ultimately interested in. You're going to integrate out the short wavelength modes by computing the path integral, and maybe a second partial answer to why these EFT approaches work so well is that considering the Feynman diagrams with only cap H internal lines, you can actually sum them all to a given order in your approximation of velocity, let's say, whatever that is. You can sum all these diagrams. In the far zone, you write the effective action of the particle world lines. You compute the first order radiative corrections, if you're doing this to first order. And you use a prescription from quantum field theory that, and the important part here is the imaginary part yields the total power radiated by the gravitational waves, and that allows you to predict the time-dependent phase, which is what LIGO should be detecting. You can also compute the far zone metric to a given order of approximation, but apparently that is an extremely challenging thing to do. So just a couple of summary comments. There's a clean separation of scales here. The renormalization coefficients at the RS scale are fixed by the internal structure of the bodies. Working with the effective action and Feynman rules means results scale straightforwardly to higher orders of V. That scaling to higher orders of V is much more challenging in the PN approach. It relies on, I think what someone was saying earlier, is an analogy to QFT. There's a strong reliance on using the same methods. Okay, thank you. Okay, so EFTs provide an explanation of the observable effects. that is just as good as the PN explanation, independent of the PN explanation. As I've said, this is just recapping where I'm going. No emergent phenomena in this case. I want to make a comment about the predictive scope of the effective field theories, a comment about some general theoretical considerations to motivate this idea, motivate my conclusion. So, effective field theories have only reproduced the predictions of PN approximations for in-spiral systems, but it's claimed, I don't know if this has been done yet, that they can yield higher order results than those obtainable by PN methods. So maybe a wider predictive scope, maybe more powerful. They've begun to be applied successfully to other two-body problems. I'm thinking of the work of Chad Galley on these extreme mass ratio problems where it's not a weak field, areas where the PN approximation doesn't apply. I think we'll find out much more next month about the scope of effective field theories in these kind of gravitational systems. But in any case, it's no worse than that of post-Newtonian methods. In terms of theoretical considerations that might be relevant here, you can derive the same uniformly valid approximation to the full metric using EFT approaches. They're based on the same, essentially the same theoretical content, which is GTR. They make use of the same empirical facts about the in-spiral system. And EFT models have a wider domain of applicability in physical theory than do post-Newtonian models. And I'm referring back to Doreen's diagram from the first day where she had renormalization group methods and statistical mechanics, quantum field theory, economics. We can add gravitational physics to that. They seem to be quite powerful methods. Okay, so as I've said already several times, the explanants, what's doing the explaining, the explanations are based on these good models with predictive and theoretical power. And crucially, the explanations rely on elements of the model. For example, the near zone, approximately Newtonian modes that correspond to physical properties of the in-spiral system. So it's not the case here that there are infinite idealizations, that we're working with EFTs that contain idealizations that are, you know, very, very far away from the actual, what's actually going on physically, which is, again, a contrast with the way EFTs are applied in perhaps in other areas. Okay, so they do explain at least as well as post-Newtonian models do. And finally, there's no emergence here. You've got a good explanation from the base level using effective field theory methods. If you regard emergence as a failure of explanation at the base level, then there's no emergence. If you regard emergence as some other way that's related to that, for example, a failure of predictability or a failure of reducibility, if you can make sense of that, again, there's going to be no emergence. I think this result generalizes to however you think about emergence, sub-fill. It generalizes to other types of gravitational systems, modulo the spin issue, and it may generalize to other areas of physics. Thank you.
Okay, we have a few minutes for questions directed toward Andrew, and then we'll open up the Bob.
Okay, you just made some remark a minute ago about the effective field theory isn't taking some limit that I forgot the exact words you used. Maybe if you could repeat what you said. It was just on the previous slide, I think.
Right. My comment was that the effective field theory in the near zone splits the metric into the approximately Newtonian cap H potential modes and the long distance radiative modes, and that the near zone description of the system as including those short wavelength potential modes and long wavelength radiative modes is not infinitely mistaken. It's a decent approximation of the system.
Okay.
That was the point.
Right. So, but in contrast to that, I'd like to argue that the whole starting point is a completely inconsistent viewpoint with general relativity. I mean, the introduction of point particles at step one, I mean, if you really took that action and asked what solutions are there, there are absolutely none. I mean, that doesn't make any sense in the nonlinear GR field equations to put in point particles. So I would claim that the starting point of this is even one step away from some, you know, infinite volume idealization or something like that. It's really starting from something that's absolutely inconsistent.
Okay.
I'm not saying it doesn't derive correct results when interpreted appropriately or whatever, but it seems to me that it's a much more extreme example than sort of taking limits or talking about null infinity, as I was describing yesterday. It's really starting from something that's absolutely impossible. Not just an idealized limit, it's something that's inconsistent, and then, you know, deriving some results by approximation.
Okay, thank you for that. My response would be a question, which is whether you think that vitiates the kind of explanatory value of the EFT approach. I mean, we still have, as you said, great predictions and great, approximative derivations. So does the fact that the model is based on this inconsistency with GTR mean that it's not explanatory?
No,
it's not.
I haven't looked at the effect of field theories. I mean, my belief is that one could derive the results, you know, starting from general relativity. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Not really the action, but at least the, you know, the equations that are eventually derived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you believe that, Bob, do you believe there's an essential difficulty, or is it merely verbal? That is, if you started, for example, with little black holes instead of starting with point particles, would you get to about the same place? Or do you have to make a guess that you're not willing to make?
Sorry.
No, I think it would be much harder to, if you're really going to start with small black holes, that's a really hard problem. I mean, you'd even have to define what you mean by the motion or the gauge you're using. I mean, you know, that isn't probably a useful starting point. I think there are other starting points and limits that you could take and so on that would then allow you to describe the small black holes, well, probably undoubtedly as part of in the same framework as this whole formalism. I mean, I'm not questioning that one couldn't obtain this. I was just jumping on the statement that here we're starting from some, you know, legitimate viewpoint rather than an idealized thermodynamic limit or, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that this is actually much worse than an idealized thermodynamic limit, which at least is mathematically consistent. The starting point here is not, but I think you could get to the results by legitimate starting points. I mean, at least that would be my hope and faith or something.
You spoke about integration of path integrals to eliminate certain degrees of freedom to get an effective action. What example, how complicated a situation has been actually worked out?
You mean to what order in the velocity? Order of the?
Well, what path integrals have been evaluated?
I'd have to look back at the Goldberger and Rothstein paper to give you a specific example, but to a given order in the velocity approximation, you write down the path integral to that order.
And then, beg your pardon?
Up to and including 3PM.
Right.
They're done perturbatively, or they're, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, they reproduce the 3PN results in that paper.
In the non-spinning case.
Yes, in the non-spinning case, exactly.